wouldn't be a Gloucester cast without the bam, 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 bam.
That's right.
No one knows what I'm talking about. Kim knows what I'm talking about. Gloucester cast 241. We're in the 240s. We're getting close to 250.
Wow. Are we doing anything special for 250?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know what. Yes. I don't know. I'm so busy at work right now. My life is
super busy time.
So I'm like crazy, like 100 hours plus a week right now, getting in at 4, getting out at like 6:37. Exhausted, physically exhausted. So I have Saturdays off. This particular Saturday, I didn't have the kids, so I all from Sunday morning through when I left work on Friday evening, I was like, oh, just get me to Saturday. I'm so broken up. I'm so beat up. So Saturday morning at 7:30 a.m., the text message comes from my mother. Can you help me get the stuff out of the attic and put stuff up into the attic? And I fucking wanted to. I just, you can't say no to mama. But I just was, you know when you have something in your head, you're really just looking forward to laying down, resting, having a cup of coffee, snuggling with your honey, and it all goes to shit.
Sorry, Pat.
Sorry. Oh my
Mama
gosh.
Fucked me yesterday.
Oh, my God.
I think Mama doesn't listen to the podcast.
She don't listen to this. No one listens to this. This is just an exercise in getting together and having fun.
Aren't you glad you drove an hour?
Yeah, Jeff Zinn came from Western Mass. Wherever, Merrimack.
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 All the way from Merrimack.
Merrimack with a C. Okay, people are confused when I say Merrimack. They don't know where the hell it is because it's the Merrimack River. It goes everywhere, right? Yeah. No. Merrimack with a C is right next to Amesbury.
Oh,
okay.
That's not far.
Just at the juncture of 95 and 495, right around there.
Just before New Hampshire.
Just before New Hampshire. A mile from the New Hampshire border. That's right.
I bought a red grill up there. Everything is related to where I purchased grills. So now I know where it is, only because I bought a red Weber grill up there.
There you go.
In the middle of the winter. And I hijacked my daughters because we were at a soccer game at Danvers Indoor Sports. And we got out of the soccer game, and it was like there was like probably about 6 inches of snow on the ground, and I started driving. And you know, like 8 to 10, they really kind of don't have a really good sense of direction. But when everything is foreign to them, like, where the fuck are we going, Dad? and you know, I got about three quarters of the way there before I got the first, where the fuck are we going, Dad? Without the fuck part. Where are we going, Dad? And I'm like, well, there's this grill. And they're like, Dad! Dad, really, Dad? I'm like, oh, but it's red. It's so special.
Are you still using it?
No, that one has passed on to a good friend.
Oh, okay. Nice. That,
not the one. You got a red one in Cambridge for me.
Yeah.
Remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yesterday I got a blue one. Yep, my little red one. Anyway, I don't want to bore people with grill talk.
And who are our special guests today?
We have Nicole Schraft is here. She hasn't been here for probably over a month.
She just
moved from her little bungalow near the beach in Rockport to a big bungalow near the beach in
It's over in Pigeon Cove. We stayed in Rockport. It's not huge, but it's bigger for us, so we're renting for now.
Yeah.
She's a renter.
So keep
She's
us in
happy,
mind.
Though.
You're
looking,
happy, though.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great. It's a great situation for us, and so we'll be looking for our forever home fairly soon. We signed a 12-month lease, and then we are excited to start looking for
You've got time
the
now.
Right house.
Is there anything worse than moving?
No, not at all.
No.
We
Maybe
moved
the death of a close of a loved one, and then moving.
Right. that's the conventional wisdom: marriage. Death, divorce, and moving.
That's
right. Yeah. I didn't know. I haven't moved a lot. I lived in Gloucester, and then we bought this house in like 2000. Freddie was already living in it, and it was either buy it or get out because they wanted to sell it. So we chose to buy it. So I never house hunted. I never looked around. I was just like, okay, we'll buy this. And I've been there since 2000. So we've been there for other than moving like for college.
You didn't have to move. You didn't even have to move your toothbrush because you were already there.
Yeah. So I literally have never moved, and it was a nightmare because Freddie has like he's been there for 20 years, and he had 20 years worth of
stuff.
Crap. And he doesn't listen to this either, but if he was standing right here, I'd say the same thing. Just like, fish tote and trash can full of, like, there was one tote in the basement that had paperwork, fishing line, hockey gear, and then four squash from last year's garden sitting in it. And I was like, where would you like this to go? Like, what pile does this go in? And none of it could go into the trash pile. He had to keep all of it.
The,
like,
one good part is the purging. Oh, you didn't purge.
He purged at the end. We brought the rabbit out of the backyard at 8:01 for the new owner's walkthrough that was supposed to be at 7:30 in the morning. So we had to call and panic. And so he had to purge at the end because he had no choice.
Purging is the one part that I do like, is the stuff that, you know, you have to have parameters of, if I haven't used this or looked for it in the past 2 years, you have to let it go.
Yeah, you should sit down with him. But we did get rid of a lot.
It feels good, though. Especially in Rockport, you can get rid of your shit at the dump. Us Gloucester people are going to pay to get rid of our shit.
Yeah, it's like Disney World over there, I know.
You know, believe it or not, this actually relates to the show.
And the reason, which is why I drove for an hour.
And the reason I'm here... because one of the characters in the play, the older sister, is kind of a hoarder. We decided she's not quite a hoarder. She's more of a pack rat. Right, and there's like a little bit of a gray area between pack rat and hoarder. You know, like with a pack rat, it's like just tons of stuff, but it's a little more organized than the hoarder. And actually, the second act set, we see this. It's actually on stage, and it's brilliant. Our props designer just had a field day, like dragging up stuff from the basement of the theater. We have 38 years worth of pack rat stuff down in the basement at Gloucester Stage.
I was going to introduce.
I was going to use.
Like that. It's like probably the most butchered segue in the history of Good Morning Gloucester segues.
Let's start over.
It's coming right here. We have Heidi Dallin and Jeff Zinn are here to talk about Flight of the Monarch. Jeff Zinn directed it, and he's also the managing director at Gloucester Stage.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
I'm sorry, that was Jeff that was just speaking.
Right, and first time on Good Morning.
First time. Heidi said, we're popping his cherry today on the Gloucester. That was Heidi Dallin, D-A-L-L-I-N, Heidi Dallin. Yes.
Thank you.
The Dallins.
Thank you.
The famous Gloucester Dallins.
Heidi Cherry Popper Dallin.
Oh, God.
This is going
always
someplace.
Always so early in the morning.
So talk about Flight of the Monarchs. Started when?
We just had our first preview performance Friday.
Kim, you went.
We went last night. Tom and I went last night.
Last night, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And we had two shows yesterday. We had a matinee and an evening show, and this afternoon at 2 p.m. is our official press opening. So, and that'll be our fourth preview. Last night was very exciting because Lee Volman showed up. Stuck around afterwards and raved. Really, really wonderful comments from Lee. It was very exciting.
Yeah, my husband loved it. Not that he's like with Lee, but he loved it. He's going to write a really good review.
Cool. Yeah. No. And it's been good.
And it runs through the end of the month. So
right. This is the first of 4 weeks. So folks have.
That's a long run.
The acting
is that's a new.
Is
they're all about a month.
Is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah.
And you start in May, right?
So. Right. Yeah, mid-May.
Right.
Mid-May through the end of October is the new normal for Gloucester State.
So is that five or six big shows?
Six big shows.
So I want to mention in the show notes we have a link to go directly to the website so you can see the information about it and buy tickets. But let's talk about the play. What type of play is it? When you go, your expectations are X, and when you leave, what are you feeling at the end of this?
What you're feeling? Okay, this is a show about a brother and sister. They're a kind of middle aged, and it's a really classic kind of older sister younger brother dynamic, right, where the older sister is really crusty and kind of, you know, beats up on the younger brother, literally beats him up at one point, even though he's twice her size.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. She's kind of in trouble. She's found herself in a in a kind of a lockup ward in a hospital. She has some anger management issues, and he comes in and he's like, "What's going on? You know, why are you here again?" And so that's where it starts out, right? And but the thing, so it's a little bit of it sounds a little grim, right? Because she's kind of has mental issues, and but the interaction between them is so amusing and entertaining. But it's also kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's like very sincere, I think. Like,
yeah.
It has a very sincere feeling to it, their dialogue. Even though she's very crusty and, but she has all those funny one-liners.
Yeah.
But
who plays the lead?
Nancy Carroll, who lives in Rockport.
Oh, wow.
And is one of the New England area's greatest actresses. She just did a show at the Huntington. And she is...
The acting was phenomenal.
She's unbelievable.
Kim got here early, and she was raving about it.
Nancy Carroll is a true professional with a resume as long as your arm. She, you know, film, stage, Broadway, a staple of the Boston scene. Done many shows at Gloucester Stage. And what's so interesting about Nancy is that she always gets cast as this kind of hard-bitten, crusty, you know, like kind of mean old lady, you know, character. And she is the sweetest, easiest.
She is so lovely.
She is so wonderful to work with. And I sort of early on in the process, you know, because I would be talking to her, giving her some direction, and she kind of fixes you with this stare. She's like looking dead at you, you know, with no expression on her face. And it took me a while to figure out that this is just Nancy listening carefully and really taking it in. And you know, it's not
throwing daggers, not shooting daggers at you.
There's no attitude in this whatsoever. The other actor, the younger brother, Tucker Smith. Again, wonderful actor. He's new to all of us. We went to New York and had a casting session in New York City, and he showed up, walked in, and immediately just kind of
clicked.
You know, inhabited this character who is a fisherman. He captains a sports fishing boat out of some unnamed fishing port, right? Could be Gloucester.
It sounded very Gloucester-y
to
me.
Jim Frangione, who wrote the play, grew up in Cape Cod.
Okay.
So the play is written kind of, you know, originally with a Cape Cod sensibility, but it translates so easily to Cape Ann.
I thought he was
that part of the
most,
reason you brought... I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I just want to say I thought he was one of the most authentically fisherman types that I've seen.
Because it can be overly done.
Because a lot of times it's so... The accents and the... You know.
I know.
For the same reason, I can't watch A Perfect Storm.
Right.
Well, Tucker was born in Rhode Island.
Right.
So he grew up
and
there.
His dad lobstered in Gloucester, as it happens. So, but I'll tell you, it was so funny because, you know, I had this casting session in New York, and all these guys are walking through the door, and I'm like looking at the casting associate next to me, and I'm going, I don't buy this guy as a fisherman. not for one minute. You know, and I'm like, you know, they're New York actors, you know, and they've got
their skinny jeans on.
They got their fishing jackets on, you know, and they got their pseudo, you know, Boston accents going, and you know, whatever they think that might sound like. And then Tucker walked in, and he's just like, oh, thank you. Thank you for showing up.
I had to go all the way to New York to find someone to play.
Yeah,
a fisherman. Joey wasn't available, so this is his busy season. Well, you were first on the list, but
the thing is, you know, we did. I mean, if there are any Boston area actors listening, we really dug deep in the Boston area basically asked everyone we knew.
Wow.
You know, all the, you know, and there's some wonderful actors, they're all busy. It's a small pool, right?
Yep.
And they were all busy and couldn't do it for one reason or another, and so at the end of it we went to New York City.
Wow. So I'm wondering how Tucker's experience has been here in Gloucester.
Oh, he loves it. He loves it. And he's done some research. You know, he's like wandered around the docks trying to get himself, like, you know, in conversations with people. And you know, he told me how he was getting the fisheye from, I mean, no pun intended, from a couple of guys. But you know, he wanted to get to go out on a boat, and I don't know if he ended up doing
staying
that.
Staying at the Roses. Yes.
Yeah.
He's staying at Maggie and Joe Roses. Yeah.
He loves it here.
Doing Maggie and Joe things.
Exactly. He's doing Maggie and Joe. He's really enjoying his time. Yeah.
Well, most of the actors do. What was the reason why this particular play?
Well, Jim Frangione is an old friend of mine. We were in New York together back in the early 80s. We were members of a theater company, so I've known him forever. And he a couple of years ago, he's an actor and a director and an artistic director and an audiobook narrator. He's done a million.
That's blown up too. In the past, like, 4 years, like Audible and
exactly,
like, just incredible amount of. That must be a nice gig.
It is a nice gig, and he's a real pro. I happen to do a bit of it myself. I have a number of titles. But I won't plug my audiobooks today.
If there's a website, I'd be happy to link to it.
If you go to audible.com and type in my name, you'll see my list. My big book is People's History of the United States, the unabridged version. The abridged version was done by this very little-known actor named Matt Damon. But I've got the unabridged version, and we just passed the 10,000 unit mark on that.
Well, and also, why did you do that book?
But going back to the original question, my dad wrote it, okay?
Whoa.
People's History of the United States. But going back to the original question, so Jim, you know, as I said, I've known him for years, and I've hired him as an actor when I ran my theater company on Wellfleet. He said, "Hey Jeff, I wrote this play. Will you give it a look?" So he sent me the play, and we actually, in the past couple of years, have workshopped it three different times. We did a reading of it at his company out in Great Barrington, the Berkshire Playwrights Lab. We did another reading of it at Shakespeare and Company in Western Mass. And last year, it was part of our Never Dark series at Gloucester Stage. So we've done three workshops of it, and every time we did it, the audience just like
responded,
fell in love with it. I mean, the response was incredible, which sort of surprised me, because it's a very, like I say, it's a, you know, it's a two character play. It's kind of quiet. There's no big fireworks or anything in it, and
it's not a bank job.
No, it's not. It's not bank job. It's just a really intimate and entertaining play about, you know, brothers and sisters and dysfunctional families. I mean, that's the essence of it.
Because, well, that's the, you could just say families, right?
Yeah, right. Is there any other kind? Exactly.
Are there any families that are all just a little dysfunctional?
Have, you know, death of a salesman.
Well,
I didn't want to make that comparison, but I thought that kind of family feelings that you feel when you're watching Death of a Salesman.
Well, is it Tolstoy who said, you know, all happy families are the same, and all unhappy families. I mean, the interesting stories are the unhappy families. That's a mangled quote, but that's
Jeff, how do you like your tenure here? It's been 2 years since you've been managing director.
Yeah, I came in right at the end of 2015, so I'm at the end of my second full season at Gloucester Stage, and it's been great.
What's the difference between the Gloucester Stage and Wellfleet?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, during the time that I was in Wellfleet, it grew. I was the artistic director of Wellfleet Harbor Actors Theater, better known as WHAT. And in the time that I was in Wellfleet, it grew from 45 wooden folding chairs and, you know, a budget of, you know, $100,000 or something. And 20 years later, it was, you know, over $1 million, and we had three venues, and we built a theater with 200 seats. So Gloucester Stage is kind of at the upper end of that, because it's you know, fairly, it's a small, medium-sized theater in the scheme of things. And it's very similar in many ways, because, and by that I mean that the type of work that Gloucester Stage is interested in doing is very similar to the work we did in Wellfleet, which is to do interesting new plays, to do challenging plays, provocative work, not just kind of fluffy summer theater entertainments, although, you know, we're happy to do comedies and things like
that.
Well,
it seems like Gloucester Stage gets actors that really want to stretch their
exactly.
wings, you know what I mean? And it's a win for everybody, right?
Right.
You know, because you get these phenomenal, like you get Lindsay and you get these other actors.
Did you really put your finger on it? Because the reason, when you do interesting work, you entice people to come and work for you, even though the money is really short,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you were just doing something that was brainless, they would say, well, why do I want to come do that?
Well, it's just like any kind of art, any medium at all.
Yeah.
When we're not, like, say photography, and you kind of, like, and then if you get into a rut and you're not challenging, you know, you say you have certain equipment and you're not challenging yourself, you're like, oh, you kind of fall off, right? But then, or if someone gives you an assignment, rather than like it being your creative assignment and breaking new grounds for yourself, it's just so exciting, as opposed to going through the motions. You feel alive, right?
Right. Absolutely. It's the work itself that is the magnet for the artists to come and do it. And so yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, so this play plays through the end of the month.
Right.
We have some special events going on during the play.
Well, the number one, as far as I am concerned.
Me too.
All know what's coming. We're building to this. Kim Smith, and what's the date? The date is September 17th, the matinee. Kim will be speaking in the talkback.
Yes, so after the two Sunday shows, in the middle of the run, we do a talk back. So after the show, the actors come out, the director, I believe the author will be there too,
mm-hmm.
whoever we, you know, part of the artistic team, and the audience is invited to stay. And also, you don't have to see the show that day.
Oh, wow.
The talk backs are free. And if you've seen the show another day, you can come and you can ask questions. It's a dialogue. If you're a Kim Smith fan, you can just come.
For free.
For free.
Are they going to be serving booze at this one?
I don't know. Well, we'll have to tell them to keep the...
Can you sneak in
shots.
Booze
well,
for
we'll
this
keep,
one?
We'll,
no,
we'll
you
keep,
know how
we'll keep the shots. Concessions open. We'll keep the
All
concessions
right.
open.
Oh,
yeah, we'll keep the concessions open.
For our loyal hardcore alcoholic fan base...
Let Cat Ryan know. We'll keep the concessions.
So wait. So I forgive my ignorance. Is there any crossover with actual real Monarchs and the play?
I was going to ask that, and I didn't want to because I thought with Kim Smith and I saw the title and I, before I read more about the play, I was thinking of Monarch like Kim. Kim's butterflies.
Yeah, there is.
Well, that's. I'm assuming that's why she's invited to do the talk.
Well, right.
Yes. As the resident, as the area's monarch.
Foremost.
Right. Yeah, foremost.
Yes, foremost.
So, yes, there is a connection. There's, they both love to, it seems like they both are very attached to their gardens. They talk about their gardens, and that's part of the story. And the monarchs that they've seen, but, you know, monarchs are also a symbol for transformation and metamorphosis. So I think it's more of a symbol on a deeper level than necessarily.
Yeah, it's kind of a metaphor for... There's a daughter in the play who lives 3,000 miles away, and there's discussion of the 3,000 mile odyssey of the monarch butterfly, and we learned a lot of interesting stuff about it. But one thing that I really hope to do is Kim sent us her wonderful documentary about the butterflies, And I hope to incorporate pieces of that into the promo video that I'm creating.
Oh, okay.
For
that
the show.
Wonderful. So what I sent you
with permission.
Yes, you have permission.
Thank you. That's putting her on the spot.
Right. What I sent you was the little short 3-minute film. Mm-hmm. From the Berkshire the film that I made for the Berkshire Museum.
Perfect.
So what I can also show you, send you a link to, is the hour-long documentary.
Well, I'd love to see it. I have plenty from the 3-minute to use, because I just have a sort of a vague idea that I'm going to steal like a few, seconds long clips and kind of use them as transitional.
And our set is also, it's a living set. There's actual, the set, there's part of the stage management team for their daily, for coming in and their pre-show is someone has to water the grass. So, yes, we have to water the grass every day, and the grass is real Gloucester grass. Just want to let you know.
Oh, milkweed?
Like lawn grass.
Not lawn
like
grass.
Tall, wild grass.
What's it called?
Beach grass.
Love grass.
Sea grass?
I don't know what kind of grass. I wasn't familiar with the grass.
It's called love grass.
Is it? Really?
It is.
Well, it's directly from Susan Kelly's garden. She spent the entire week, every time I was in the office, I'd look out and I'd see her with her unloading pallets of grass to bring in for the set designer to see if she liked it for the set. So, Susan of Generous Gardeners and the Tulip Festival and all of that. That was great. And, this play is it's a reason for people to go to our Never Darks, which a lot of them are free, most of them. You can see new plays that maybe we're even considering because Flight of the Monarch was a Never Dark. We have a Never Dark on Tuesday. Memory of Water, featuring none other than one of our favorite actresses, Miss Lindsay Krause.
Oh, wow. And that's free?
Yeah. I think it's free. Yeah,
yes,
I believe
it's
free. Yeah, it's free. You can see Lindsay Krause for free at Gloucester Stage, and the bar will be open.
In a Never Dark, and which is on Tuesday night, and which potentially, like you said, in a couple of years may end up being famous play.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, and in speaking of famous plays, Tuesday the 19th, we have the first annual Young Playwrights Festival, with an evening of 10-minute plays written by some exciting new playwrights. And starting at the youngest playwright is 7 years old.
Awesome. All right, I'm just going to read their names, and I'll put a link to this. Claudia Bowman Barash.
No. It's the
down below.
Those are people that gave us housing.
Oh, those are the housing.
Down there.
Sorry. Malia Andrews, Sophie Camera Murray.
Yep.
Skylar
Corbett.
Skylar
Thane Corbett. Tracy Thane.
Skylar Thane. Great people. Plum Street people.
Our Plum Street gang.
Yeah. Megan Gallo, Leah Sophia Numerosi. Is that Grace's?
That's Grace's daughter. Yep. Fantastic. Niece. Yep.
And Annika Schultz.
Yep. One of our apprentices. So they range in age from 7 years old to 22 years old. And
Tuesday, September 19th at 7:30, which is also free.
Free, yes. There'll be a little reception afterwards to meet the playwrights. A lot of the plays are also being directed by the playwrights. With adult, I'm mentoring them. And Sarah Vanderwall, who was last year's education apprentice, is now a full-time staff member at the theater. Not in the education department. It would be great if we had other staff members. But she's the house manager and company manager. So she's working with the kids. And Annika Schultz is really running it. And we start the youth acting workshop on September 22nd. So the fall session.
I love Annika. And so is Skylar the youngest one?
Sophie Cameron Mary is the youngest. She's 7 years old.
Okay.
And they summer in Rockport. Okay. They're from Winchester.
So that's fantastic. Jeff Zinn, thank you so much for coming in.
Go see
Flight of the Monarch playing through the end of the month.
Through the end of the month. Then To Kill a Mockingbird opens after that.
Ooh. To Kill a Mockingbird ends after that. And there is a link at the top of the show notes to buy tickets or find out more information. Thanks again, Jeff.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
That was fantastic. Kim, the 17th is the date I want people to circle, because that's the date that you're going to be at the after the matinee, giving you'll be there participating in the talkback.
Yes, I'm excited. I'm very excited to do that. And I'm excited to know that, I think when I make a little post about it, I don't think a lot of people are aware that you don't have to be at the play that particular day.
No, you do not have to be at the play. You can come at... The show's little under 2 hours long, I would say.
So
you come at like 3:45.
Okay.
You can hang out in the lobby, have a glass of wine, have a beer, wait for Kim. And then the show ends. We do let people use the restroom. Some people do need to leave. And then the actors are all in chairs. You'll be all in chairs on the set.
Okay.
And Bob Walsh and Jeff will probably run the. It's really a dialogue between the audience and the artists.
Okay. All right, fantastic. So what we normally would have led with, but we always have to accommodate our actor friends.
Our theater.
Put them at the top.
Our theater folks.
We always put them at the top. But probably the top story of the week: Hurricane Irma.
Yeah.
If being from this area. Mm. Generally, everybody has friends or family down in the area that's being most affected by this.
Yeah.
And as you know, my grandfather, Captain Joe, and my parents have places down there in Naples.
Yeah.
So we're a little concerned.
I'm worried about my mom. She's in Lake City, which is northern central Florida, but then my aunt is in Venice. So I think Venice is getting...
It's amazing. This is the widest swath of a hurricane that I can ever remember, like, of where they're predicting devastation.
I think they said it's the largest storm ever in recorded history of the world.
And it seems like it was so well forecast.
Which is good.
And yet, I still have friends and family that have chose to stay.
Yeah.
So I was just reading something about this today. Somebody I used to work with in Beverly at Harbor Light, it is now teaching in Florida, and posted something that was a little, probably like a little bit crass, but like things, top 10 things not to say to us if you don't live here. And part of it was, the naive thought that you can just evacuate. I mean, I stop and I think, like, do companies close? Can people just pick up and leave their work? Who takes it? One of her big points was, there's lots of elderly around us who need us to stay. They can't pick up and leave. And, flights are expensive or flights are booked. And I have a friend who posted last night, he literally is just sitting on the highway, not moving, and had been doing so for like 3 hours. And was hours away from getting out of the state, and now literally running out of gas. And so I guess you're right, a couple of weeks, or days ago you could have hopped on a flight, but right now
they're stuck.
It's not that they're stuck, but or they don't want to go.
No.
But can they go? Like, does everyone just stop work?
Right.
I mean, the hospitals, have to stay.
It's a
So Nicole, this girl that wrote that thing, what were some of her points, like what people shouldn't say?
Well, so she didn't write it. She shared, she shared it from somebody else, but it was, and trying to get into her head, it seemed spot on for things that we wouldn't think of, some of which are, I was just saying, the elderly around them need people to stay. They have jobs, they have children, the finances of just picking up and leaving. Well, I have this very idyllic, somebody can pick up the phone and buy a very expensive plane ticket and leave their job and grab their pets and their children and take off. But some people don't have anywhere to go. You can't just go up north and get a hotel room. And so it's not as easy as why aren't you leaving? And then certainly getting out, we all know now from watching the news that getting out of the state now is very difficult.
At this point, they have said, if you haven't gone now, don't go.
To go back to the forecast, so how many people really 6 days ago could say to their boss or their employer or whatever? Some people have jobs, you can't just leave.
You
a lot of people do need to stay because of what they do.
Like if you're a nurse, you can't just say, I've got to leave.
Or a teacher,
but
there's lots of different jobs. Or you run your own business, can't leave your business if you. There's lots of different reasons. So those are
there are definitely reasons.
Yeah.
But I know some people that don't have
those reasons, right?
And I have some good friends, some good family that don't have those reasons. And I hate second guessing people, but like, And so I'm trying to get my mind around like why they wouldn't have left. And one of my thoughts was that in the past 10 years, like the Weather Channel has become such big business and the hyping of storms has become such big business because they know there are people that will stay glued to the TV. Yeah. Like,
the ratings skyrocket.
The ratings skyrocket.
And advertising dollars.
So, I'm not saying...
I think that
some people are like, yeah, they've said this a million times before and nothing's happened.
Well, I definitely have a friend who said pretty much that, you know, look, people, I know to my northern friends, you're worried about me, but I've lived through this before. We know how to do it. We know how to take care of ourselves. We're good. And I'm like, I don't know this time.
That's how I feel about this one, too. Like, this is a different...
There are ones that I would have said, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't have left.
Right.
This one, there was no question. If I was in Naples or Fort Myers or the Keys,
right,
I might not have left if I was in Miami because of sea. But the Keys, Naples, or Fort Myers, I would have gone.
Right.
I would have gotten a car and I would have driven because
because
the thing is like with like and you don't necessarily in my mind have to get in a plane because when these things hit land, they need water to sustain.
Right.
So 10 hours in a car would have got you, in my mind, out of harm's way.
Well, if you're watching the path is changing. Right. If you were watching the news footage, I mean, the highways were just walled up, you know, just.
But
like,
they weren't 3 days ago, they weren't. Because Craig went down there. Craig Kimberly went down there.
He did?
Because Joan was there. And Joan didn't want to leave. He said, and he told me he argued with her for a while,
and
said, "We gotta go. You gotta go." And like I don't really know what their conversation was, but she didn't want to go, and he went down there to get her.
And to get her, wow.
And they're standing in Alabama. He double checked and he booked a hotel room in Alabama, knowing that was his plan, and he got out of there. But I mean, we pray for our friends and our family down there, and.
I was at TD Bank just yesterday, and there was a gentleman at the teller next to me who had just gotten back from the airport. He had brought his brother to the airport to fly down to Tampa yesterday at like noontime, and he was, you know, saying how it's the only flight that was going down to Tampa. Yeah. And I said, that pilot picked the short straw, you know, but he was flying down because he has a house down there and he wanted to be there. Something, I don't know who the gentleman is, but something about he had just planted a tree. And he was worried about his tree.
Oh.
And so he was flying down, but to be with his house. And I get that too. I mean, it's hard to leave everything and not know. But also the preparation of getting the houses. Maybe people feel like if they're there, they can salvage more than would be safe if they weren't there. I don't know.
Worry
it's tough.
Looters.
I've never been in this situation. We were just down in the Keys in April and spent a lot of time at
I remember your wonderful pictures.
Yeah, well, we spent a lot of time at Bud and Mary's Marina, and they're like, to see the footage of what they're doing. There's not a boat in sight right now, and
so
it's
eerie. Where do you take... They just take the boat off and drive
with
it?
And put a trailer? I don't know. I mean,
Trailer it out? I mean, what do you do?
I don't know what they did, but...
I heard about, like, people sinking boats temporarily.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's fascinating, really. Yeah.
If you have a... Say you had a whaler... And you could take and it was an outboard.
Yeah.
You could take the outboard off of the boat and sink the boat.
And sink the boat.
Not much is really gonna. Wow. Electronics, I guess, right?
I can't imagine it's that easy, but I don't know.
Yeah, scary. It is very scary. Our prayers are going out to those folks.
Do you want me to talk about that? Because a lot of people are emailing me like, what
happens to the migration of birds?
What happens to migrating birds? And it's pretty interesting. Like a lot of birds sense the low they'll leave after a low pressure system, so that they're oftentimes flying right after a bad system, which is a good thing. But many, many birds are taken out, and they just die. It's pretty sad. and then there's so much habitat destruction afterwards that all the usual places that they would go to aren't available. So they've been, if they do survive, they've been churned and carried far off, and then there's no place for them to, they can't find food and nourishment. And a really famous story is a couple of years ago, a Wimbrel had a tracking device around it, and it flew into the storm. And it's a Wimbrel is a fairly large shorebird, not like a little tiny piping plover. It's about, you know, 18 inches.
Like a big crow.
No, it like flew into the
the size of a crow.
Oh, like the size of a crow. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it flew into the eye of the storm, and you know, traveled with the storm. It's calmer in the eye. Swirled around, made it to the other side, but ended up in the island of Guadalupe. Oh. And Guadalupe is most shorebirds try to avoid that island. They only go there if they're carried because there's hunters. And so it was killed by a hunter.
Oh,
so
it's hey. So uplifting.
I know. I've met Joey's.
Why does
Joey Shimataro. Cut it out.
I brought that.
There's so nothing funny about that. Yeah. Can you imagine?
I thought you would like that story. Not just because I know you really care about creatures and stuff, but just I thought it's so ironic.
Oh, right. It isn't.
Right.
When these stories come up, or like these, you know, these funny kind of like unfortunate, like, you know, visual things that happen. This is what people don't get. People aren't, you know, happy that the bird died.
No.
It's more about the irony of the situations.
And the
you know what I mean?
The human nature, tragedy, comic, you know, interaction.
Yeah, right.
So very, that made me think there's three islands that allow hunting: Martinique, Barbados, and Guadalupe, and there's no restrictions. A guy can catch 500 to 1,000 shorebirds in a season, and it's just for fun. It's not for food.
I was going to say, what do they do with
it?
It's just for fun.
Gamey. I bet you they're gamey.
Yeah. Do they even try to eat them? I can't imagine.
Well, in Europe there's a lot of issues with people in Northern Africa with people eating songbirds. They're a delicacy, so they shoot them during their migration and then they eat them. There's like one bite of food on them.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's what happens.
So many things can happen. It's also can be a very exciting time for bird people after a hurricane, because inland there'll be so many species that have been blown off course and off track, so people have the opportunity to see things that they've never seen before.
This is a huge migratory time.
Well, maybe that's why our little plover family seem to leave a little earlier than, like, last year recording things. There were more plovers here towards the end of the summer than there were this year.
There are distinct patterns in the lobster catch. Two or three days before a storm,
So
the catch drops off.
It does.
They hunker down.
They hunker down.
And
they can sense that low pressure.
Absolutely. There is no question. Yeah. I've seen. I've been here long enough. I have written out the slips for the landings, and it is. It is straight up. It's crazy. Like sometimes,
crazy,
like I'll be like, "Wow, that guy was catching all those lobsters for that many days in a row."
And
now
then,
here's the thing: is I wonder if there's a low pressure system coming. And then I did, because I don't look like a lot of times, you know, late August, because you just have beautiful day after beautiful day after beautiful day, and then you're like, "Geez, I wonder if there's a storm coming." Yeah. And then you look and you're like, "Oh my God, we're gonna have a storm in a couple days." That's crazy, right? That happens.
Yeah, there's a lot of habitat destruction during a storm like this. Coral reefs, I mean, it affects fisheries, it affects everything. A huge storm like this.
The 2 days from now, on September 12th, there's the public hearing on plastic bag ban.
Yes, going to be there. City Council.
City Council, City Hall,
at City Hall, 7 p.m.
There was a survey sent out to a lot of the businesses. There was, from what I understand, very low response rate. There was only one response turned in as of a certain date.
Of people saying how it would affect their business negatively.
There was very little comment. There was crickets.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you can't really put words into their mouth. I'm on record as liking the ban the bag thing. and the styrofoam cups.
Nicole.
That's a succulent. Kate got that from me, and it doesn't need water.
It doesn't need any water whatsoever.
Yeah. Like an ice cube every once in a while. It doesn't need water. But we're getting off track.
You're doing well with that. You're doing well giving that no water.
Well, it's the only thing that's going to survive here. It's the only thing to survive. But a point that Kate made about to me was that the she likes using, she doesn't always do it, but she prefers using the reusable totes bags because she's a psychotic recycler, first of all. I am not such a recycler. Like, to me, if the recycles, if everything's already gone out and all I have is the garbage bag and there's a piece of recycling, I will just throw the one can in with the trash. And she will yell at me. Yeah. And she will go into the dirty trash bag, pull it out, and put it into... That's how good she is and how big time she is all about recycling.
My husband and Kate would really get along.
There you go. Me, not so much. But I understand its benefits. But she said a big point for her is the convenience of having those bags... are much more durable. The recyclable bags, you could put at least three times as much groceries in one of those bags. So there's less bags and less trips to the car that you have to take.
Right.
So that's a good point.
Yeah.
There was a guy, there were some people were saying, had suggested that stores should charge 25 cents per plastic bag, which I think is...
People have tried that, and that is still not eliminating.
That's not. I don't think
that's not a problem. So, it's not solving the problem.
Anyway, however you feel about it, September 12th, which is Tuesday.
Yeah.
Go to the meeting if you're interested. Right, Heidi, did you have to leave?
I have to go. It's the press opening for Flight of the Monarch today, so I have work to do. So,
thank you so much for coming. We always love having you.
Well, thank you. I love to be here.
Yeah. Anytime. You know, you're always welcome.
Thank you.
So you don't have to come and talk about, Gloss of Stage stuff. We like Gloss of Stage stuff. You don't have to just talk.
Keep Man Symphony's coming up, too.
We'll
see you
September 23rd and 24th. Woohoo.
We'll see you for that, and we'll see you for Flight of the... To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes. Yes, and we have local actors.
So make sure you get them in here.
Gabe McGee. Yeah, and... They're my students, so they'll listen to me. They'll get up early.
They'll come.
So Nate Oakes could walk. They could both walk here. So
Nate Oakes.
Yeah.
Larry Oakes.
Larry Oakes' son.
Oh, Kate's a big fan of the wife. I don't know what the wife's name.
Sarah Oakes.
Sarah.
Yes. Oakes.
Yeah. Kate likes her a lot. She always talks. Her name always comes up.
Sarah
was at Maritime Gloucester, right?
Yep.
What's that?
She's at Maritime Gloucester. Sarah Oakes.
Oh, really?
Okay.
And Nate is playing Jem. And Gabriel McGee, is playing Dill.
There you go. All right. Well, we'll have all that to talk about next time you come back.
Excellent.
All right. Bye, Heidi.
Thank you.
Bye.
Nicole was in tears when she showed up today.
All right. I was not. I wasn't exactly in tears. I said I could be in tears. I got a little choked up leaving
a little
him.
Verklempt.
A little bit.
You dropped off Thatcher where?
Dropped him off. I dropped Thatcher off at the Coast Guard station for his first day. He's a perspective because I don't have his 27 pieces of paper figured out yet. But for the what's called the, I keep on saying the Sea Cadets, the U.S. Navy Sea Cadets. But because of his age, he's actually what's called the League Cadet, which is the 11 to 13 year old version of the Sea Cadets. But for me, it was, I got a little choked up because Thatcher, if you've read anything I've written, has always been really like hardcore obsessed with the Coast Guard and the waterfronts, and he sails like crazy, and he's hauled his own lobster traps for years, and he's a little wharf rat, and
he's
this is like
bug,
a huge passion of his. But also as a, as an educator, I know how important it is for these kids to do more than,
baseball.
I laugh. Like Thatcher, he's all about hockey and sneakers, Yeah. Like, I want him to have something more. And so when I first read about this Sea Cadet program, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this fulfills all of his interests and passions, but all the great things that I, I'm kind of hardcore with him that I try to instill in him. And it couldn't have been the program from what I've read. He's brand new. you know, fits all of my hopes and dreams for what he would ever be like as he grows up and matures. And he, so I read it all to him, and we sat down and looked at their website and their Facebook page and shared with him the little bit that I know, and he was, you know, in it like you wouldn't believe. He said, when can I start? So he started today. So they go and they do, I mean, I won't be able to wax poetically about it because he's brand new, but he went today and they were doing their, you know, that presidential, their physical fitness test that they have to do a couple times every year. And then they will sit in the classroom and do a lot of STEM or STEAM work. So they were going to do some underwater robotic training today with one of the instructors who was a Massachusetts state detective now. And then they just do a lot of great things. But with it, when they're not in the classroom or they're not at the Coast Guard station, they're doing a ton of community service, a ton of volunteering, a lot of color guard work and making appearances, and just for so many different reasons. It's such a phenomenal program. You know, the educational piece, but the community service piece, and then, you know, they have to memorize the, you know, the three corps of the United States Navy, you know, whether or not he's only 10, whether or not he pursues something in the
armed forces. I have to imagine it gives you a huge leg up, though, in, you know, applications in college and schools.
Well, I can't lie. Everything. Like, I mean, it's like custom designed for what Thatcher loves. I mean, you know, so if he's not on the ice at hockey, he wants to be on the water. Yeah. You know, he's kind of obsessed with that, and I love that about him, and, you know, and I love that too. But also selfishly, I'm thinking, you know, I know these kids need something, and what I want him, you know, I want him to be that kid who people want to recommend for things and people want to go the extra mile for because he's a good kid,
right,
and because he's done some great things. And this program is, you know, it's just, it's
when
all
it comes
about
time
that,
when it comes so. Time for scholarships, there's
So their graduates from last year, you know, all went on. The kids who had kind of stuck with it and finished the program last year, who were college age, went to one went to Brown University, ROTC, ROTC. You know, one I think went to Norwich Academy. One went to the Coast Guard. You know, so they are all doing great things. And we met at the meet and greet a couple weeks ago. We met three of the high school students who have been in it for years, and you know, they stood there, you know, at attention and spoke so eloquently, and they were funny, and they were polite, and they were, you know, great kids. They're all on the wrestling team at Gloucester High School, and just real good kids. And you know, I hope Thatcher sticks with it. It's hard. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of commitment. But anyway, I pulled away from the Coast Guard station because I left him there by himself, and I'm proud of him. I think it's a great program, so I'll definitely be writing about it as he continues. He flies a helicopter in 2 weeks. Just him and the pilot. They go up.
Are you sure?
One at a time.
Yeah. I got a link to the Sea Cadets program, to the program that you're talking about.
Yeah, so I gave you the national. So the U.S. Navy Sea Cadet program is a national program, but this one is out of the Gloucester Coast Guard Station, but it's the David G., forgive me, but Olette division of the Sea Cadets, and it's named after obviously David G. Gillette, who got the Medal of Honor for his service in Vietnam for saving some crewmates as a gunman on the river patrol boat. He saw a sniper up in the woods and dove and protected the rest of the crew and took a mortal wound. And so his family now are big supporters of this program, and it's named after him. But all good things all around, so...
Love
I'm writing
it.
About
sounds,
it later.
Sounds
but
tremendous. Yeah.
There are programs out there like this one, and I feel like that one up at the genome one.
Yeah, I knew. Yeah.
I feel like there are opportunities. I think I said this last week. I don't think there's ever been more opportunities for young people than there are right now.
Yeah.
Like there's like programs like this. Like, but you just have to go and do it.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't sit on the couch playing the video games. There are these things that parents can funnel their kids into that are just give your kids such a leg up.
Right. And also, I think, you know, Nicole's going to be writing about it now regularly on Good Morning Gloucester.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great way to let parents know, because I think there's a lot of people don't know about these kind of programs. And,
I see something about these. I see there's a lot of the families that I admire in town, like Timmy and Missy Pierce.
Jack and Callahan White both just started back in like April.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, they've done it for a few months already, and you know, Thatcher's just starting today. But it's a, you know, like I said, it's a big commitment. You have to do 80% of the drills in order to advance to the next level, and you know, they expect that you put this first and or second, and yeah, so they just started. Thatcher's excited to be with them. He knows both of those boys, both
hockey
great kids
too, right?
Yep.
Yeah, there you go. A lot of the hockey parents, a lot of the hockey kids are water bugs.
Yeah.
Seems. That's interesting, whether it's
frozen water or
yeah, right?
Yeah.
There you go. Well, that's awesome. Proud of Thatcher, good kid. Yeah. Both of your kids are great kids. And you know, the job you do with those kids, like, you know, it comes,
beautiful.
Shows through in spades in your posts. Like, all that. There's no one, I'm so jealous of the, you know, I know being a teacher is difficult, but there are some really nice things about being able to spend the time that you have with your kids is a big blessing.
Well,
and you make the most of it.
And it's a choice you probably made to, you know, so that when you were raising your family, you would be able to have that time together. So
yeah, well, they're there with me. And, I'm definitely, I could, you know, go on and on about how we're blessed to have that. I mean, Harbor Light's a phenomenal place. I could do that selfish that way, but I'm happy to have them there. And
how many
what
years
getting.
Does that go through?
It goes to eighth grade. So they both started when they were 5 months old, and we go through eighth grade, and then, you know, we're in Rockport. They'll either go to Rockport, or we'll see what happens after that. But I'm blessed to have them there. You know, I don't see them often during the day, but I joke sometimes that they go to work with me. They come home from work, you know, one day I just want to drive in the car by myself just once. But and then I work 11 months, so I have, you know, all the school vacations off, and I have half the summer off to spend with them, and we all reap the benefits, so it's good stuff. Very boring to listen to right now.
No, it's good. Your pride is showing through. We're happy
and
for you.
It's not boring. You hear so much about dysfunctionality that it's really nice to know about fully functioning family.
Well, let's not get carried away. I swear, like a truck driver, Kim. Ask either of my kids.
That was funny. I said, did I tell you the story about Catherine Ryan when I saw her in the Sevilla in the parking lot when I was at going into Stop and Shop?
I only heard little bits, little snatches.
So Catherine Ryan, like the sweetest person. She may be like the sweetest, most soft-spoken person. And her kid, and we've all been there. She's getting out of her car to go into CBS, and I was going into Stop and Shop, and she is very angry with her children, like, get in a store! And I'm like looking over it, and I'm looking at, if you can't see my face through the podcast, I'm like startled, like, oh my God, even her, she gets these moments.
Cat Ryan get angry.
It's okay.
Did you see that video that Olivia posted on my timeline?
No.
About cleaning the house before company comes.
I did see that.
I was like, now that stems from when they were little, and I would be like, you know, every Saturday morning we're dusting the house, we're vacuuming, and you know, they thought that was like, you know, having to.
That was Saturday mornings. We had chores we had to do.
You did again yesterday. You had Saturday morning chores.
It was cutting the grass and vacuuming and picking up. Yeah.
You should look at the video that she posted.
I'll have to check it out. Just a couple things to talk about. Last night, Kate and I went to Happy Belly. I love it there.
Yeah.
I got the chicken and waffles only because I'm like, I have to
try
this.
That,
chicken
right.
and waffles. who does chicken and waffles, right?
Was it good?
It was phenomenal.
Really?
And the highlight of it was the slaw. They had this like slaw, but it was spicy.
Ooh,
almost
wow.
like there was some kind of, I don't know what kind of hot sauce they put in with the slaw, but it was...
Huh.
Kate was like, oh my God. And she started, the fork started coming across the table. And I was giving her the eye, and she couldn't stop, even though I was giving her the eye, like, come on. You know this is the best part of this thing. You're eating my stuff. But yeah, we had another great, we keep on going back there. We keep on having great experiences there. Boatport Princess, they have lobster cruises, and they buy their lobsters. Full disclosure, they buy their lobsters from us. People say the great things. I thought that they were done with the lobster cruises of Labor Day. They just came out with the September schedule.
Oh, okay.
So there's a link to that. Okay. I have not been yet. Charlene Delaney did a post about the grand opening of Cafe Brew and Spirits, in the Gatineri building.
Yeah.
Have you been?
Where is that? What's the
you know where it's in the West End, the furthest retail space in the West End that you could be.
You know the Gatineri building or the building the across from Blackburn Tavern? The building across from Blackburn Tavern.
Okay,
Yeah, it used to be Cafe Dolce.
Yeah.
Now it's Cafe Brew and Spirits.
On the other side of Salty Frank's.
On the other side of Salty Frank's. Yeah, on the second level.
Yeah.
Yeah. People check that out. We always like to give a shout out to new businesses that are starting out. I want to end with this. You've been doing some interesting posts including cardinals in your backyard.
Yeah.
And particularly, I guess cardinals are big freaks for blueberries.
Yeah.
Because you put out trays of blueberries?
I put out a little, when blueberries get mealy, or you know what I mean? They don't, any kind of blueberry. They love them super fresh, they love them in the garden, and they love these little bowls that I put out. But I originally started putting them out for the catbirds, and the catbirds would actually come to our back window and yell at me if I hadn't put the blueberries out.
Wow. Because you don't have enough going on.
So you need to yell at. I'd hurry into the refrigerator, wash the blueberries out, and put them out, and the catbirds.
You wash the blueberries for the birds because they have to be, because the birds can't eat the dirty blueberries.
Well, I just don't, I mean, pesticides and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, so the catbirds are used to you going out there and feeding them,
right.
And so they come back.
Yes.
And they're not afraid of you.
Like 3 or 4 years now,
wow.
We have them coming back, and whole families now. We have like whole catbird families, and now the it's so regular.
The cardinals are aggressive though. They don't chase the catbirds away.
They all come at different times. Like the cardinals are earliest in the morning. So because I've been putting them out for the catbirds, now we're supporting several cardinal families as well. And blue jays too. Blue jays are much more elusive. The blue jays will swoop in and take one, and then we won't see them. They don't hang around and eat them.
So. We've got cardinal family in our yard.
Aren't they beautiful?
They are cool. The blue jays are my favorite bird, but besides the piping plovers.
Well, if you put
and the ruddy turnstones.
I have a new ruddy turnstone picture for you.
Oh, Jesus. No, but like I don't know what they're eating. They must be eating something because they've been around.
Oh,
they,
you have so many good things in
rangers,
your yard. You have so many good things
in
your yard. Yeah. Yeah, nutty, berry type things. And plus you're surrounded by, you have a lot of woody native plants around your house too as well. Yeah, so if you want to encourage the cardinals, put out little bowls of blueberries for them. And peanuts, unsalted peanuts.
I don't want them shitting all over my deck, though.
Oh, they don't really make that much of a mess, really.
I want to see Kim's monthly budget. You know, like the spreadsheet of what Kim...
Yeah, she's got...
$85 on blueberries.
Gotta feed the catbirds! Gotta feed the catbirds! Tom's probably like, fuck, gotta hang you.
No, he doesn't. He thinks it's... because. He's working there at home, so he thinks it's kind of entertaining to see all
to see you running out. Oh, I gotta get the blueberries up for the catbirds. They're pissed off. They're pecking at the window, Tom.
Now they come to my office window, and they'll yell there as well. They know that I'm in my office.
That's hysterical.
Like, what the fuck, Kim? They're like, the blueberries are not in the blueberry spot.
And they're all holding up their watches, you know.
Tapping.
No, I'll have to get. That's right.
Anytime now.
I'll tell you the
Ginger,
bowl.
Get over here.
The bowl that I said, well, you know, I want to make sure that they see that they're blueberries, right? Here, you know, this was a couple of years ago.
Very concerned.
So we have this white bowl with blue polka dots on it.
And
oh, that will really attract them because they'll see the, you know, they'll really stand out the blueberries.
Who does she think she's kidding? They're pecking and breaking their beaks, their little beaks. They're pecking at the fake blueberries.
No, so now I put blueberries in the blue and white polka dot bowl, and it really works. So.
That's hysterical.
Oh my God.
Can I ask him a question before you
before
you
show
up? So
sure,
speaking of birds, I've been meaning to ask you this. Is it possible that Finn saw a puffin while sailing?
Yeah.
Or is he crazy?
No, I think he could.
Well, the hurricane.
Well, this was like back in like the end of July.
No, I think it's possible.
Tony Gross, I don't know if you saw the post, sent in photos of a pelican.
He saw a brown pelican.
Yeah.
Yes, the brown pelicans are a little bit they're not common. Remember that white pelican that I saw? That was the only recorded sighting of a white pelican. You'll see brown pelicans every now and then, and you would see puffins, I think.
You would, because so I've never seen a puffin around here.
They're in Maine, so, yeah. I mean, it's way off. It's, you know, they breed in the islands on Maine, so it would make a lot of sense to me that he could actually see one.
So he's pretty savvy. He said he saw a puffin on the breakwater in Rockport while leaving during one of his sailing lessons. And then we said, well, what did it look like? You know, and he said it looked like a little penguin, small and faddish with a little short orange beak or bill. Yeah. So sounds like a puffin to me, but of course there's no photographic evidence to support
this. Sounds like it. Yeah. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very good to know.
There you go.
Except for that puffin who's far away from where he should be, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if he thinks it's good news.
But when we went on the whale watch, Kim, and I know there's a big thing with the gannets, there's the sickness with the gannets. We saw a couple gannets on the...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, they would start migrating now southward. So, did you see that somebody made a comment from Montauk, New York, where they saw, they found a sick gannet at a beach in New York? And so they saw our post. They somehow Googled it. Good Morning Gloucester came up, and they said, "Oh, we have one here in Montauk. We didn't know it was happening on Cape Ann as well." Mm. So, so what are your cardinals doing? They're just hanging around.
You know, I never have enough time to just sit and watch the birds.
Can you tell what you have? Is it one bright red?
There is definitely a male.
Male.
That is the. The males are bright red.
The males are
red. So definitely a female.
Okay.
And there's both.
Okay.
There's one of each.
So you probably have fledglings around too. So you can tell that it's a fledgling. So whether it's a male or a female, the beak is bright orange. If it's a fledgling, the beak hasn't gained its full color yet. Okay. So the beak is paler. So when you're looking, just try to see.
I think it's a fledgling because I've seen from your photos the distinct beaks, and I said, "Geez, I'm like, usually the beak sticks out more."
Right.
And I don't normally take big observations, but cardinals cardinals and blue jays, I will kind of stop and check out because they're kind of interesting.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
You know, they're kind of up there and they swoop down and then they, you know.
And blue jays really announce.
Well, not like just the regular little birds. There's a million little birds. You can't tell one from another.
Right.
Yeah. You could tell a cardinal.
Right.
You could tell a blue jay.
Right. Sure.
But with all these other birds, it's like 5,000 other little birds that I wouldn't know one from another.
Right, little brown birds all blending together.
Yeah.
Like all different types of little sparrows and warblers.
Except for the really cool ones at Topsfield.
Black-capped chickadees.
The ones where you can feed them by the hands.
The Ipswich River Wildlife Sanctuary. Yeah.
Great
those little chickadees, aren't they?
Black-capped chickadees, Massachusetts state bird.
Well, there you go. All right, we're at an hour and 8 minutes.
Uh-oh.
It's the GloucesterCast 240. Where the hell? 241.
Wow.
Nicole, thanks for coming. Kim, always thanks for coming.
Oh, thank you.
And Heidi Dallin, Jeff's
in. Nice to have you, Nicole.
Thank you.
It's always fun, right?
Yeah.
Come and bring alcohol next time. It's a joke. Inside joke. If you've listened to the podcast long enough, you get that inside joke. Have a great week, and prayers for our friends down in the southwest, southeast.
Yeah.